Take off your jacket, because it's time to get deep under the covers with a loose reed.
Hi, Garen, how are you?
Good morning, I'm good. How are you?
How's your loose reed?
My loose reed's pretty good, actually. On the weekend, I watched a documentary on Netflix called The Centre Will Not Hold, and it's a documentary about this author, Joan Didion. Do you know her?
I browsed the summary of that documentary, I think.
Yeah. She's 82, and she's actually one of my favourite writers. She's written 5 novels, but she's best...
How cool to come across a documentary about one of your favourite writers on Netflix.
It's pretty cool. It's made by her nephew, too, so obviously he's got a lot of good access to, information as an insider. Anyway, I think she's better known for her reportage and non-fiction and essays and journalism. And she's just one of the sharpest, greatest, insightful kind of writers ever. And anyone who writes essays and non-fiction...
Her name is?
Joan Didion.
Joan Didion.
Anyone who writes non-fiction and essays, they always sort of think they're a bit Joan Didion. I think everyone wants to be her, but I'm sorry.
She's effortlessly Joan Didion.
There's only one Joan Didion. She's just one of the most singular writers of our time, really. So I thought, let's talk about some of Joan Didion's work.
Cool.
Yeah, so her style's really kind of diagnostic, remote, very cool, detached kind of reportage style. And
when you say cool and detached, does that mean she doesn't get caught up in it? She's fly on the wall, for want of a better term, though?
Not emotional at all.
Right.
Very, you know.
Not like music journalists who basically just try and join the band every time. Myself included.
Oh, God. Her 1967 essay, Slouching Towards Bethlehem, was about the dark side of, the hippie movement in San Francisco in the 60s, like Haight Ashbury.
Yeah. Yep, I have heard that.
Yeah, essay. Yeah. And I actually read that on the plane on the way to San Francisco.
Kind
of, maybe it coloured my experience, but in the...
Muddied it, perhaps?
Muddied it. In the doco, her nephew asks her, what was your time like? Because she sort of was quite immersed. She went there on the ground, in the field and reported. And she said that she saw a 5-year-old that was tripping on acid. And he says to her, what did you think of that? And she sort of says, well, actually, it was gold. As a journalist, that's like the material that you want. So that's pretty intense, hey? Like,
having said that, as a journalist myself, I don't bring your tripping kids up here. Interesting, there's enough. Plenty of volunteers as it is, thank you.
That's a huge journalistic ethic thing, right?
It really is,
if you see something happening, do you get involved?
Intervene?
Or are you there for then part of the story?
The documentation, or do you intervene? So, and then, interestingly, later in the doco, she had all these...
And now he's the president!
Oh, God. She talked about how, she lived in Hollywood and knew everybody, Warren Beatty, all the rock stars, Janis Joplin and all the film stars, and they all went to her place, they're having a party, and she went into her little daughter's room, who was just like a bubba, and there was all this drug paraphernalia on the floor. So, it's just like quite dark times, eh? So she sort of documented that. She's amazing. And 2 other books that she wrote, Blue Nights and Year of Magical Thinking, touch on grief. The first one about her husband dying and the second one about her daughter dying. And they touch on that in the movie as well, in the documentary. So, yeah, really, really interesting. And the way she writes about grief, again, very cool, detached kind of style. And that was her way of writing through grief. So, yeah, interesting books about grief.
Year of Magical Thinking is often recommended to people
who've had an
unexpected loss.
It's a sensitive one to recommend, though, because it is quite cold. And also you have to be aware that she's got a very glossy kind of life, so she does write from a very perspective of glossy privilege, I think.
Right.
So I'm quite mindful of that when I'm reading her. And
you have to check yourself reading it a few times, thinking, hang on a second, what do you mean? For me, that's worse, sort of thing.
People might not like to hear that because, she's like the goddess, but... it's something that's definitely there. But this book here...
But, I guess if you read enough of her, you probably would also see the downside of living that life.
Yeah, absolutely. The hot, kind of like the hollow
shallow,
glamour.
Shallow, boring crap. Yeah, I'm not sure.
Yeah, hollow glamour.
I'm not saying I don't want to be massively successful, I'm just saying, you know. Keeping it real.
But this book here, South and West, it's a really slim novel. Not a novel, it's actually a collection of two essays, and it's slim, 126 pages,
so
came out this year.
So like it's a twin slim. What was it called? What would you call that?
Twin slim.
I see you scratching for a way of describing that. It's bigger than a pamphlet.
126 pages.
Boom.
But yeah. The names are
doable.
A double.
That's all it is. Doable.
Does this mean half of it is south and half of it is west?
Yeah. So the first
Sarah,
one.
Reading between the lines.
Yeah. Southwest is actually the name of the first essay, and it's two pieces extended from her notebook. So it's kind of repurposed material. And the first one's a road trip through the deep south with her husband, and she's dealing with race, class, heritage in small towns. And then the second one is really interesting, California Notes. She was commissioned by Rolling Stone magazine to cover the Patty Hearst trial. And what was it, 1976. And it actually turned into something else. She never filed that piece.
I picked up a Rolling Stone, I picked up a magazine at home in the weekend and went, just look cover up. This is good, man. What magazine is this? This is excellent. Rolling Stone, who would have thought?
Not Australian Rolling Stone, though,
I don't think so, no. No, not pretend Rolling Stone.
Yeah.
No, but it's a really good, and it's got a history of people not filing stories and getting lost doing, being asked to do one thing and then doing another. And there's Hunter S. Thompson.
Yeah, that's right. So it ended up being a piece about her growing up in Sacramento, which is really interesting. Yeah. So she can write about anything, really. I actually read a piece by her where she talked about what she packs when she goes away.
I think I've read that.
Yeah.
She's wonderfully detached, but also manages to make it sound fascinating.
So even, a list from her is fantastic.
A book of lists, I'll buy that.
Yeah. There are a couple, actually.
I love a good book.
There's another book of hers called The White Album, and that's essays that she published in Life and Esquire. So, she was writing for good publications. And it's politics in California. She's very California. She's San Francisco, that Hollywood, those are her areas. In the 60s and 70s, so she wrote about the Black Panthers.
I was going to say boom times for those areas.
Yeah. Manson murder, she covered that. That's touched upon in the documentary as well. And she also sat in on a recording session with The Doors. And in the documentary, she says that The Doors are like her favourite band. She was kind of in love with Jim Morrison and his vinyl pants.
I think that also was a product of the time. I think that was every single man fancying woman.
Yeah, he was a poet.
Yeah, those pants really made him a great poet.
Yeah.
He was, poor Jim.
Poor Jim,
I love Jim Morrison.
I love The Doors, but I don't like him.
Really? How come?
Yeah, I don't like front men,
Yeah, I can see that.
Too much poetry.
But you know what? There's a lot of front men who suffer from that thing. I know what you mean. Say Mercury Rev are a great band. I love Mercury Rev, but I saw them live and I thought, look at your little gig you're trying to run there, mate. Who do you, hey, I'm a real freaked out dude. That thing. And it's just like,
he is Mercury Rev, though.
You can see right through it. And whereas I think Jim Morrison probably was quite original, because he really made a dick of himself as well in a lot of situations, sort of didn't really care about that, which I kind of, I don't know what I've read, I never saw The Doors live. I may look old, but I know I saw The Doors live. But you don't like them, you prefer them to be an instrumental band?
Oh, yeah, the music's great, Ray Manzarek and, I don't know,
he does,
Jim Morrison comes in. But, I do.
Jim Morrison comes in.
And he's warbles away, but no, I do like The Doors.
Yes, father, yes, son.
Yeah.
That one. Yeah, okay, I see what you mean. Yeah. So she writes about The Doors, and we're going to play a little Doors song.
Yeah, 5 to 1, which is a great Doors song from their 68 album, Waiting for the Sun.
If you're going to start off with Joan Didion, what's your kickoff? What would you buy first?
Actually, what is amazing is Slouching Towards Bethlehem, the collection of essays. It's fantastic. It's very of the time, but, it's a classic.
And what's her most recent one?
Her most recent one's this one, South and West.
Cool. All right.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. Here's The Doors.
Yeah, come on.
He's straight in there. Yeah, come on.
Love my girl. She looking good. Come on.
bass sounds like a tuba.
Jay-Z liked it.
Help yourself, Jay-Z.
5-1, baby. 1 in 5. No one here gets out alive now. You get yours, baby. I'll get mine. Gonna make it, baby, if we try. The old get old and the young get stronger. May take a week and it may take longer. Ballroom days are over, baby. Night is drawing near. Shadows of the evening crawl across the years. Yeah, walk across the floor with a flower in your hand. Trying to tell me no one understands. Trading your hours for a handful of dimes. Gonna make it, baby, in our prime. Come together one more time. Get together one more time.
Was Loose Reads.